Welcome back, Canada, to another weekly edition of MMA Canada Radio. As always, I am your host, Josh Oliveira. This week on MMA Canada Radio, we have a bit of a landmark show, a coming-of-age show, possibly, at least I figure, in the MMA media scene. You just haven't quite made it until you've talked to the man himself, Canada's best-known mixed martial arts promoter, Mark Pavlich of the Maximum Fighting Championship. He's got a big show coming up, and people who know Mark know that he's always entertaining regardless. So, you know, we're going to have a good interview with him. And then, of course, the scene in Canada just keeps growing. The mixed martial arts news comes fast and furious, so we'll cover all of that. And here to help me do exactly that is my co-host, David Stanford. David, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Josh. Glad to be here. You definitely hit the nail on the head there. It's a huge week for Canada with the Rogers Centre sellout for the UFC show. I can't believe that they sold 55,000 tickets for that.
Yeah, I guess we should cover that first. Well, I think if you remember last week, we both agreed that they could easily sell the 42,000 that they had announced at that point in time. And you know what? To tell you the truth, I'm not totally shocked. What'll be interesting to see is how the situation goes with scalping and the resale market. Because if you remember in Vancouver, all of the tickets were snapped up on the fan club buyout period. And then scalpers were actually selling them at cost or below cost. So I'm curious to know if there's a similar situation happening just right now in the Toronto area. Or, you know, if the demand really is as high as it looks. And if so, I wonder how much more than 50,000, 55,000 they could have sold.
Well, when you figure the 42,000, you know, went instantly to the fan club, and I can't help but think that, you know, a lot of that's somehow got to be automated buying from scalpers, because, I mean, of course, as usual, you hear the cries from the local people saying they couldn't get tickets, even when they put the additional 13,000 tickets on sale. I'm of the mind that it's going to be a situation like it was in Vancouver where, you know, people jack the price up, no one will buy them, and then it comes showtime and you've got scalpers standing outside the venue selling them for face value and less. So hopefully that's the case for all the fans in Toronto that didn't get tickets. But an $11 million gate, I find that just, wow, that's mind-blowing. You know, more than, you know, it's like doubling anything they've ever done before. And going beyond the $10 million they thought they had. So, yeah, definitely huge for them. I don't know how big they can go. How many more tickets do you think they could have sold?
Well, you know, the venue tops out at, what is it, 60 or just under 70,000? I think they could fill it up, basically, if they want to. You know, they can't go much further than that. That's probably the biggest venue outdoors in Canada that would be conducive to that type of a show. So, you know, whatever the maximum capacity of the Rogers Centre is about, I think, as big as they could go in Canada. I don't think they have much interest in going further than 55,000, you know, to maintain sight lines. So I suppose realistically, logistically, the highest they can go. You know, in fantasy terms, if they had just the right venue, who knows, right? I mean, could be in a city the size of Toronto and with all the interest in the surrounding area, could be as high as 150,000, who knows?
Well, and that's what I wonder, eh? Because you think of Pride Shockwave in 2002, where they had 91,000 in the National Stadium in Tokyo. I mean, that was a crazy card where, you know, there's Vanderlei Silva, Crow Cop against Sakuraba, Hoist Gracie, Nogueira, Bob Sapp, on. You know, the K1 cross promotion they did there. And 91,000, that's huge. And if they could get a stadium, an outdoor stadium, to do a summer show in Canada that size, I can't imagine they wouldn't sell out. You know, if literally within minutes they're able to sell 55,000 tickets with a two title fight card, you know, if they stack something with three title fights, you know, and big title fights like they have with two Canadians competing on the 129 card, I can't help but think they could sell 100,000 tickets, you know, and it'll be crazy to see if that's where it ultimately ends up. You know, how big can this go? That's what Dana White was saying when the conference call this week was, you know, how big is this going to be, and who knows?
It will be interesting to see
Ontario's
at the same
hungry.
Time, though. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see also, though, if the market cools down somewhat. We have to remember this is the first major MMA event. you know, there'll be a couple other minor ones just ahead of it. But for all intents and purposes, the first major live mixed martial arts event in Ontario, and it is a big card. You can't expect a card like this every time. So can we expect this type of demand every time? I have my doubts. I assume that the Canadian fervor for MMA, it can supply, you know, only so many shots of $11 million in a matter of hours before that starts to slow down somewhat. So, you know, as the first out of the gate, though, it's impressive. It's impressive to pull $11 million out of any economy in North America right now. So, yeah, that's a good chunk of change.
Well, and surprising, you know, because Ontario, they were hit quite hard during the economic slowdown, especially the auto manufacturing and whatnot. And given the just general malaise of the economy around North America and the world, if in more buoyant times, I wonder if Ontario, you know, can support a huge show like that. So interesting to see. But yeah, a lot of factors got to come together. And I thought it was actually quite surprising to hear Dana White being so modest about it this week, and just, you know, being really surprised and not talking any smack about it, and just being really humble about selling that many tickets. And I'll be curious to see what the MSC does and if they're able to get into Ontario. I look forward to hearing about that from Mark when he gets here. Other than that, we had this past weekend, wouldn't hurt to mention, possibly the last time we'll see Fedor fight. What were your thoughts on his fight with Antonio Silva? And, do you think we've seen the last of the Last Emperor?
There's a lot bound up in that question. I think, first of all, what did I think of the fight? I wasn't totally shocked. I think if you go back to our breakdown of last week, I was off base on a couple fights, but I feel that I and a lot of observers and fans out there saw rightly that Antonio Silva was not going to be a walkover for Fedor. I mean, he's a black belt, Antonio Silva is, in judo as well as jiu-jitsu, and so he was different than the other kind of giants, your Bob Sapps and Hongman Choi's that Fedor had fought in the past, and compounding that fact is the fact that Fedor probably isn't the fighter that we saw in the past anymore. So he's fighting maybe the best big fighter that he has in his career at a time when he's not, you know, what he once was either. So to see the fight go that way, a competitive first round with a lot of stand-up kind of going both ways, I've seen it scored in either fighter's favor, and I don't really mind scores either way. Personally, I thought Antonio Silva landed even some of the better shots, so I think I maybe even gave him round one, although, of course, that's highly debatable. But the second round, clearly, Antonio Silva got top position and just didn't give it up. And Emelianenko did a good enough job of avoiding damage, but that's obviously not how you score points. And I didn't mind the stoppage either with the swollen eye there. So my thoughts on the fight are that it was kind of a little bit sad to watch, but not entirely surprising. I actually bet some considerable amount of money on Silva, so I was happy for that reason.
Have we
seen the last of Emelianenko? I'm not entirely sure. I think maybe if given his absolute druthers, I think he may, you know, all other things being equal, be just about done with the sport. I don't think, personally, and you could see a little bit of this after the fight there when he said maybe this is the last time, but I don't think that the fire is burning too hot in his belly just now. But, you know, money concerns and concerns with them one may lead him back to the cage.
Yeah, no, it'll definitely be interesting to see what happens. But I understand we are joined by our guest this evening, Mr. Mark Pavlich, the president of the Maximum Fighting Championship. Mark, are you there?
I'm here, fellas. What's going on, man?
We were just talking a little Strike Force, but we're glad to have you on and talk a little bit of Maximum Fighting, my friend. You got a big card coming up next week, next Friday.
Yeah, Friday, February 25th, man. It's going to be awesome.
Now, how does it feel? You've got two title fights on the card, Ryan Jimmo, Dwayne Lewis, and Antonio McKee taking on Drew Fickett. It's probably the biggest show you've put on for quite a while.
I like it the best because I see the difference in this show compared to the rest of them, and it's like sometimes I used to get caught up on too big a names and not the right matchups, and this is the complete opposite. You got big name quality fighters on the show, but you got, you know, all the way through the whole fight card, you got great fights.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing, sort of segueing away from the card itself, one name that's noticeably absent on it is that of Ryan Ford. He's recently left the MFC. How did that go down? I haven't heard your side of the story since we've heard that you two parted the sheets.
Yeah, I don't know. I really, it's different now. You know, it's like I wish him the best of luck of whatever he does in the future. I just, my problem is with the organization he signed with, and that, you know, he's still under contract with our organization. So if they want to make financial restitution, we're, you know, good luck to everybody after that, right? I really don't, like I said, that organization that he signed with, they're no threat to my organization. We're on two different atmospheres, you know what I mean? We're on two different planets. So for him, if that's what he feels is best for his career, you know, God bless him and continue on, right? But at the same time, if someone needs to compensate me being that organization for signing my fighters that are under contract.
Mm-hmm. So I take it everything's with the lawyers right now, and they're sorting through.
Yeah, I don't even pay attention to it. Guys, I'm not even joking. I don't even pay attention to it anymore. I really don't. I don't watch anything about it, and I that's why I have very, you know, accomplished lawyers to deal with that type of situation. I really don't. And the lawyer calls me, and he'll tell me, oh, this is what's going on or whatever, and I'm like, hey, did you hear there's a big show going on February 25th at the River Cree Resort and Casino? You know, that's all I'm focused on, fellas. I can't let people distract me anymore.
Well, now on that card, you've got Drew Fickett. Now, let's, you know, talking about a time when you did look at the contracts and handle that stuff yourself. You guys had a falling out a couple years ago when he was signed to fight for you against Ryan Ford, and then took a fight with, I believe it was Strikeforce on their Melendez-Thompson card, and then couldn't fight on either one because he wasn't allowed to because he was under contract to you. How did you and Drew mend the fences and get him back into the organization for his title fight with McKee next week?
Well, his agent, Adolf Sanchez, was a guy that, you know, approached me about signing Drew, and I wasn't really interested until after 2010 when I saw him go on this big tear. And then I realized that he's reincarnated his life, and he's looking to make, you know, a huge comeback in mixed martial arts. And I thought, hey, this is the time to bring him in the MFC. And of course, we signed him to a 4-fight deal. And I think he's going to be extremely dangerous at 155 in our organization.
Mm-hmm. What are you expecting from Antonio coming back off of the first loss he suffered in 7 years?
That's a great question, David, and I'm telling you, that's a question that lots of people are asking because, you know, what's it like if you haven't lost in so many years and then all of a sudden you lose and now you didn't have a long time to really think about it. You're back in training camp right away, and now you're facing a guy like Drew Fickett who's, like, totally on a major role in his career right now, reincarnated himself, and Drew is very convinced that he's going to win this fight.
Well, now, you've got a lot of hungry dogs in the 155-pound category right now. I mean, you've signed Richie Whitson out of Team Quest in California. You've got Robert Washington, you know, a big stud coming out of the South Pacific of Guam. Tyrone Glover making his comeback in MMA. You're really – and that's not even to mention Cajun Johnson and Curtis.
Yeah, Carson. Cajun Johnson. I mean, there's a lot of guys at 155. And, you know, I'm it's, you know, the thing that people – when they, you hear people always talk about how big their show is and they want to talk about this and talk about that, that's one thing that no other show in our country can compare with me is my fighter roster, right? There's not even a comparison, right? When people talk about, oh, we're – you know, we got this guy. You have one guy. You have two guys. I have 25, 30, 40 guys, you know, that are all good. And that's the difference between my show and me.
Well, now, the 155 category in particular, how come you've been signing so much talent in there? Are you moving away from the heavier weights? Because I don't, you know, really see any heavyweights.
No, David, because what I'm doing is I'm building a legacy with an MMA organization, right? So what I have to start doing now is be a little bit smarter when signing fighters, not just going out there signing any random fighter walking by, right? I'm very careful. You know, when we were kids, we used to collect, you know, me and you both probably both collected hockey cards, you know, when you're a kid. The difference was, when I was collecting hockey cards, I was collecting the best hockey cards, you know, the best players, the best possible ones I could get, and that's how I'm going to treat my MMA organization the same way now. I'm going to be very selective of the people I sign and seeing that there's going to be some kind of progress with them in the future and how they're not just going to be a great fighter, but they're going to be a great ambassador for MMA.
Speaking of the lightweight division, Mark, sorry, this is Josh Oliveira. I've been quiet up till now, but
You had confirmed previously that Cajun Johnson, if he were to defeat Richie Whitson, would at least be close to a lightweight title shot. Are we assuming that the winner here of Whitson versus DeMarshall will be just as close, or will they maybe have to get through?
No, I don't think so. That was the thing that I think if a guy like Cajun was in a situation where if he would have finished a guy like Whitson off, I think it would be warranted to put him in a lightweight title. I think DeMars will have to go on. He would have to win way more fights. And same with Richie Whitson. You know, it's like, you know, Richie's 10-1, and if he wins this fight, you know, very convincingly, he could be in a great situation. And I'm still working on signing some really cool 155ers that I'm working on right now. So, you know, I'm going to add them into the mix coming later in the year.
Yeah, and there could be a lot of 155 free agents. I know you maybe don't want to mention them by name, but there's a certain organization that's rumored to be cutting just huge numbers of talented 155ers. So, you know, that could be a benefit as well.
And that's what I'm doing, right? And I'm really looking forward to it because I there's so much unbelievable great talent out there, and that, once again, you know, people aren't sitting around, you know, in their laboratory like me, putting these things together, and that's the difference, right? I'm looking for those type of fighters on a constant basis, you know, and we're finding them, and where we're putting, we're leaving out a guy like Tyrone Glover, right? A guy that beat Din Thomas, in his fourth fight ever, and went and became a lawyer, and now came back and said, no, I want to fight in the MFC and get rolling here, you know? And that's the kind of guys that we're looking for because we know the level they're at.
Just before we leave the card and maybe ask you a couple more general questions, I guess the one fight we haven't touched on yet is Ryan Jimmo versus Dwayne Lewis. And to me, this card seems like a bit of a homegrown title fight and one that people have been waiting for a long time, MFC fans in particular. You have a couple guys that they fight very similarly, both with a Canadian background. You know, do you see this as a fight that people have maybe been waiting for a long time?
You know what's funny, Jess? When I put the fight together initially, I thought maybe it wasn't going to be big enough, right? And then I started realizing that Jimmo is in the top 25 in the world right now, okay? Mm-hmm. He's ranked above guys like Chuck Liddell and some other big-name fighters, right? And then Dwayne Lewis is in the top 45 in the world. I'm not talking about Canadian rankings, guys. I'm talking about in the world, okay? So Jimmo, then you look at Jimmo's record and you go, this guy beat Marvin Eastman. This guy smashed Wilson Gouveia. Probably put a beating on Wilson Gouveia like no one's ever done before, right? Then you look at a guy like Dwayne Lewis that face plants Marvin Eastman, beats Nichols, beats all these other fighters, right? And you start saying to yourself, you know, they started going on this path, and we were joking about it, you know, a year ago that maybe they'd end up fighting each other, never even thinking that they'd be fighting for the MFC title, right? And then, boom, here we are today, and it's like, for me, it's like a proud father because Jimmo started in the MFC, Dwayne Lewis basically made, you know, the majority of his career in the MFC, and now we're sitting here at this point in time on February 25th, you know, they're going to fight each other, and it's unbelievable, and I've never been this excited ever in my organization 11 years to see a title fight, not even close. This surpasses McDonald Cote. This surpasses any kind of fight that I've ever put on in the past. I am more excited today than ever before about this fight. There's no fight I'd rather see than these two fight each other for my 205 belt.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think because they're both so highly ranked, then what you end up with, regardless of who wins, is an extremely highly ranked Canadian light heavyweight, probably top 20, I would think.
Yeah, but you're talking about rank in the world, not top Canadian. Are you kidding me?
Definitely, Jimmo's the top, but a Canadian in your organization in Canada ranked top 20 in the world, yeah.
Listen, guys, don't be mistaken. Listen, there's other websites out there, and I don't want to mention any names, and we all know who they are in Canada, and they put out these bogus ranking systems all the time in Canada, and I'm telling you right now, Jimmo and Dwayne Lewis are the top two 205 pounders in this country. Undisputed. I don't care what anybody says. You have to look at the level of opponents that they have fought, right? They didn't fight Joe Tunican. They fought tough fighters all the way up in the MFC, right? So they couldn't pick their opponents. They couldn't go, you know, and decide who they were going to fight. They fought whoever I put in front of them. And the bottom line is they're the two best light heavyweights in the country, and they're fighting each other on February 25th.
Now, both of them started, like, they didn't start out with you, but they each faced one another 4 years ago in their second fight each. And Jimmo came out with a unanimous decision in that fight. What do you think's changed in both their games over the past 2 years fighting in the MFC stable, and how do you see things going this time around?
David, they became professionals. That's what happened, right? Before, when we were starting out all those years ago, we were like just fighting kind of thing, right? Now it's like they became real professionals. and they became full circumference mixed martial art fighters. And that's the difference. When they first fought back in the day, they were very like one or two dimensional. Now these guys got a full arsenal to fight each other, and this fight's going to be totally different than the first.
And what do you think the next title fight there with Antonio McKee and Drew Fickett? Do you think Drew's his hot streak's going to come through and prevail in that, or do you think Antonio's going to come back and represent?
I honestly think McKee has to fight like he fought against Acevedo, and if he doesn't fight that way, we're going to have a new 155 world champ on February 25th. If he doesn't fight like he did against Acevedo with that same kind of hunger and that same kind of brute strength and that same kind of, ferociousness, if he doesn't have that come, you know, to fight against Drew Fickett, he's going to lose the fight.
Okay. Now, let's to kind of look away from and a bit beyond Alberta and your upcoming card. We still haven't heard any word from the MFC camp on, getting your license out in Ontario and putting on a show. Where does that stand right now?
Guys, I'm telling you right now, as we are driving to our next interview, I can't tell you how close it is. And it's like, it's driving me absolutely nuts. Seriously, I've had to look into myself to just form this level of patience waiting on all these approvals and all these things that you have to do in Ontario. And like I said, we're very close. And like I said, it's just a big, deep breath. And, you know, within the next 24 to 48 hours, we should have a final answer on it. And don't forget, you know, we're looking to go into casinos, not into, you know, other venues. So when you go into a casino, there's much more stringent applications to deal with when going into Ontario.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've heard from some of our contacts out in Ontario about some of the challenges promoters are facing out there in terms of having to use a cage, having to bring in outside referees, not being able to use referees from Ontario. How do you as a promoter see the challenges in Ontario as opposed to what you've been used to dealing with in the Edmonton area?
Well, you know, what I find is that it's very disappointing because, you know, they have announced that you can only use a cage, which I'm adamantly against, but at the same time is I'm going to conform to what they want to do in Ontario because I do believe it's going to be the largest MMA market in the world, and I believe that our organization will be the dominant force. I know DW is going to show up there once or twice a year and go, here I am, everybody, but the MFC will probably be there eventually, you know, 8 to 10 times a year throughout Ontario, and I think that's what people need to really consume themselves with because that's what's going to happen in the future.
Another thing we've heard about the shows in Ontario is that they're only looking to do a certain number a year, maybe 15, and we've already had announcements from a couple other organizations. Is that something that concerns you, or do you think that maybe in the future they'll allow more events in a given year?
Fellas, you know what the difference is? We're talking about a marathon here. You know, most of these guys have got the sprint mentality, right? So they go in here and they go, look at any, you go check outside a DW show, how many other MMA promoters have applied for a license? Not one. All boxing promoters, concert promoters, all these people that have no clue how to put on an MMA organization. You're trying to tell me guys like Tom Atencio that have millions and millions of dollars failed in MMA. People like Elite XC that had millions and millions of dollars and failed. IFL failed. Why? Because they knew nothing about the game of MMA. That's the difference between me and everybody else. Everybody knows I know the game, right? So the difference is you could have all the money in the world. Just ask Donald Trump, and he didn't do well in the MMA business either, right? Because it's a different beast. And lots of those guys that are in Ontario right now are applying for licenses are not MMA people. They're concert promoters and they're, you know, boxing promoters.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting because there are a couple major, glaring omissions as far as MMA promotions in Canada that we expected to storm into Ontario at the earliest chance, but that haven't. So you think that they haven't because they've been too challenged by the difficulty in the application process, or because I was concerned that maybe there was an issue of fair access that some of these promotions weren't, you know, having.
No, I think everybody has fair access, and if I wanted to go into an arena, I could go in tomorrow, right? But at the same time, as I'm making deals with certain casinos, and that's taking place, and once that takes place, I've always liked the atmosphere of being in a large casino to put on my events. I think tying all the amenities of a large casino has always been beneficial to my organization. So that's what I'm waiting for. So for me, my holdup is not even the commission. The commission's been great to deal with, right? It's basically you just have to fill out extra applications for checks about all kinds of things when dealing with casinos.
Right. So do you think these other promotions in Canada, they just haven't applied yet, or they're caught up in the process the same way you are?
Guys, how can they apply? They have no television deal. They have no good sponsors. They don't have huge fighter rosters. How can they apply? What are they going to do? They're just going to open a, you know, go into the local arena and put on a show and think they're going to make millions of dollars? It's not going to happen, man. It's like, it's called building your business, and that's what people keep failing to realize.
Well, and that's one thing that I find interesting, too, with the new promotions coming out. There's no real branding for the name. They're for a couple smaller ones, but there is. But I think of the bigger ones, and it's just MMA Live. Well, what's MMA Live? To me, MMA Live is a TV show on ESPN, you know?
Yes.
Like, I don't know what the hell promotion you're talking about. So do you think that's
MMA
one
the
thing
Reckoning,
that'll
yeah.
give you – Yeah, yeah, and MMA The Reckoning. You know, so, well, Reckoning's the show, so is MMA the brand? Like, you know, to an MMA fan, that's, you're just standing there and you're kind of dazed and shaking your head, you know.
That's what it shows you, though, David, what you're just saying. You're realizing that these people aren't versed in our business. What happened was the worst and best thing that happened to Ontario is DW goes in there and sells 50,000 tickets. These other people that are watching go, hey, we can do that too, right? But they don't know how to do it, right? It's like everybody thinks there's oil there, and they're going there with their little thing to check, you know, to get some little nuggets out of the water, whatever the case may be. And then they find out that, you know, wait a second, we don't know what we're doing. And, you know, $500,000, $2 million later, they're out of the business. And I'm telling you, you can write down any promoter that's putting a show on right now. Guys, get out a piece of paper and pencil. Who's ever putting on a show right now, you watch. They will not be here next year at this time. Write it down. I'm 100% positive, because they're going in 16,000-seat venues with no corporate sponsors, no nothing, saying, hey, here we are. We're doing MMA. Do you know that 4 or 5 promoters in Ontario have emailed us asking us if we could lend them fighters? Now, if you guys know me, what you do, what do you think I said to them?
Take a hike, probably.
Yeah, take a hike. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I was surprised to see that. I mean, one promotion in particular, in their initial release that they were coming to Canada, said that they were going to have Tom Kong Watson fighting for him. And I saw that and I go, well, last time I heard he was under contract with MFC in Canada. I assume he won't be fighting for anyone else.
Yeah, but you know, did you see the funny part? Now, when they announced their card, he wasn't on it.
Yeah, well,
you know,
exactly.
Yeah, it's so funny to me. It's like they just randomly started naming off people that they thought that people would want to see, and then, you know, they just thought they put their name there and do that kind of stuff. And I'm like, what planet are you people from? Like, you understand you can't do that kind of stuff. But it's like, again, it's like the Wild West, but it's coming out east, and everybody just thinks they're going to be able to do what they want. But like I said, guys, this year, this time next year, they'll all be gone.
Well, what do you think the demand is in Ontario? Because, like you said, some of these shows coming out, they're doing them in 9,000 seat venues, 16,000 seat. You know, you mentioned DW the other day. The UFC sold 55,000 seats in minutes. You know, how big is the demand in Ontario? For you as a promoter, how big do you think it can be?
I think it could be huge, but I also think at the same time is that you're only going to see a certain amount of brands being successful in Ontario. That's the difference, right? Because you're not going to see 100 shows doing well. You're going to see the MFC doing well, and you're going to see the EW's show doing well. And I don't know. I just don't see too many brands of MMA past that are going to be doing good.
And when do you anticipate now being able to go with your first show, hopefully? Because we'd heard maybe March, there was a possibility of a date, but when do you think we'll see the MFC?
Guys, I'm hoping sometime in April, and that's all I can say for now, but that's my vision, and that's what we're working on, and like I said, we should know very soon.
And maybe before we let you go, Mark...
I'd love that. Before we hang up on the interview, I'd love to know, you know?
Yeah, that would be excellent for sure. But you mentioned, you think a lot of these promoters will be out of town in a year in Ontario. And I think in the MMA entire world these days, there's a lot of uncertainty about exactly how big the sport can get worldwide. I just wonder, you know, you've been around the game for a long time. Where do you see the sport kind of on a global scale in 5 years? I'm not sure if we've ever got your thoughts on that.
Well, you know, we're gonna be huge, right? But at the same time, as you hear people making claims that we're gonna be bigger than the NFL and we're gonna be bigger than this and bigger than that, I don't say that. But I know that, you know, we're the one thing I do know, we're the most exciting sport in the world, and I can guarantee you that.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of Bob Arum's statements this week, where he said that MMA doesn't appeal to the Black and Hispanic communities, that it's limited?
Of course
to
it does.
Its, growth.
Of course it does. Didn't he ever hear of Cain Velasquez, and didn't he ever hear of Rashad Evans and John Jones? Come on, man. Listen, you know, I like Bob Arum, but at the same time, is the, you know what that is? That's desperate people making those comments, right? Desperate.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay, well, we'll let you go, Mark. We appreciate the time. Next week, February 25th, MFC happens. Two title fights, Dwayne Lewis and Ryan Jimmo for the MFC light heavyweight title, and Antonio McKee versus lightweight.
Well, thanks for having me on, fellas. I really appreciate it, and keep up the great work, eh?
Yep, hey, thanks, Mark. You as well.
You too.
Okay, fellas, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Mr. Mark Pavlich. He's got a big show coming up next week. Like I said, two title fights, and yeah, hopefully it'll be interesting to see how the MFC brand fares in Ontario when they finally get going there. Yeah, what are your thoughts on that, Josh? Do you think there'll be none of these promotions left standing a year from now, or do you think some of them will be able to get some traction?
Well, kind of as you were saying, we're not really sure what these promotions are. You know, they're former boxing promoters promoting shows called MMA and MMA Live. So it seems to me that, you know, what they're really doing is just kind of short-sighted marketing and just attempting to cash in. I'm not sure we'll see those guys around in a year. Who I am interested in seeing what becomes of them in Ontario is promotions, you know, like W1 and Rec MMA, who ringside as well, possibly. I know they're in Quebec, but there are other Canadian promotions we just haven't heard from. I didn't want to name names while Mark was on the line, but you know, I'm curious where these guys are at right now, and when they hope to crack into the market, because that's, I think, the real battle that we're going to want to see is between the established MMA promotions.
Yeah, no, I am curious. You know, W1, I mean, to me, is the obvious one, has been quite conspicuous in the absence of any news out of that camp. I was expecting to, you know, see them being right behind the MFC, if not ahead of them, in terms of getting the show together, given their base in Ontario and the success they've had putting on their shows outside in Quebec and on the East Coast. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, they're definitely spending money and bringing in some talent, you know, local talent as well, with, you know, fighters like Misha Sirkunov and Chris Horodecki. But it'll be interesting to see what happens. I don't know that the money will necessarily help make the brand, as we saw with, like Mark mentioned, Affliction and Elite XC when they went down. You know, you can throw millions of dollars at it, but if you don't know what you're doing, it's just money in the fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think that these guys are probably right, that the demand is high enough that they can kind of cash in early on. It doesn't seem that they have a long-term plan. So probably they will not burn money on these first shows, but that still may not go well for them in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of things not going well in the short run, though, we had a couple of show cancellations this past week. First one was CFC 7, Giuseppe Di Natale's show out in Winnipeg there apparently is postponed indefinitely, so that he can focus on other endeavors like his gym and that kind of stuff. So that's sort of a blow to the Winnipeg scene, although, you know, Cage Fighting Manitoba has started up there and put on their first show recently, so hopefully they can fill in where, you know, CFC is stepping out. Now, other one was... the AFC 5 High Tides, which was supposed to be taking place in Halifax, and that's Armageddon Fighting Championships, which is based out of Victoria. Now, Josh, that's your neck of the woods. Any insight into what happened there, why the show got canceled? I mean, it was a little odd to hear they were going out to the East Coast. You know, it's the other side of the country. Any insight into the story there?
Well, I think I know what most people do. There was a press release by, I think it was a comment by Jason Haidt, the co-owner and also a talented fighter in his own right, of Armageddon FC. And his basic story was that they were working with another group on the East Coast to help them to, you know, organize the show and handle some logistics because, as you mentioned, Halifax is a pretty far trot from Victoria. So, yeah, I guess what happened there was that the guys they were working with kind of consistently failed to live up to promises and hit, you know, on exactly what they said they would come through on. We're not sure what that is, but we do know that they didn't turn out to be good business partners, I suppose. So I think, though, with the CFC 7 being postponed and AFC's Armageddon FC's debut in Halifax also being postponed indefinitely, what we are seeing from the outside looking in is that, you know, promoting an MMA show, regardless of size, just takes an immense amount of work and immense amounts of commitment, to the point where even if maybe they are being successful, like the CFC shows in Winnipeg, you know, they had some decent fights and they were getting a decent response, as far as I'm aware, from ticket buyers, but it can be just so much work that it's still not worth it, you know, and so maybe Mark Pavlich, you know, is right about when he says that you need to take it full time or there's really no other way to do it.
Well, and I think a lot of people really underestimate and don't appreciate the amount of time it takes to put on a show. You know, just from, you know, working in the industry and talking with promoters and fighters on a regular basis, it's crazy. It's a 12 to 18 hour a day job. If you, you know, really put everything into it and put on a solid show. I mean, it's easy enough to, you know, have pay a guy to book a few fighters for you that are coming straight out of the gym, don't have a record or just trying it, and you're going to, you know, rent a space in a bar or a hall or something. But to really put on an entertainment experience for people, you know, to find a good ring announcer, to actually have your music cued properly and your lighting and your intros, and make it a crisp production, you know, and have really quality production value, it's a slog. And that's where I think we need to see MMA fans come out and support Canadian promotions more, because that's the one thing I find is you've got a lot of UFC pay-per-view fans. But, you know, the people who actually shell out the money and come see fighters, you know, it's still a tough ticket to sell. And I don't think, you know, a lot of people, when they say MMA is huge, well, UFC is huge. And there's a couple other promotions that are doing good, too. But for a lot of the smaller shows, you know, they're just covering costs and making a little bit of money. I don't think a lot of people are getting rich. And so it'll be interesting to see how things go over the next few years, and whether we have reached a saturation point with shows. I know in Alberta, where we have so many, at least here in the Edmonton area, you know, I wonder, you know, how many can survive. And we saw with Aggression MMA buying up the TFC that there's already that consolidation period underway. I mean, do you think we've seen a saturation point in Canada, or do you think there's room for growth?
I think it's not a matter of, you know, is there room for another promotion? There's always room for another promotion that's going to promote the right way. And what people want to see is, you know, the best fighters that are available fighting, you know, other high-quality fighters. You mentioned that some shows around Canada have a hard time selling through tickets, but I find, anyway, that generally when a good card is put together, I always tend to hear that the ticket sales went well. And I know that AFC here in Victoria, they put a good amount of effort into getting local guys and interesting fights, and they always seem to bring out thousands of fans. I mean, not thousands upon thousands, but around 1,000 or more. So, you know, I think there's room for promoters who are going to promote the right way, and you can slowly grow. You can't start out as the MSC or the UFC, but there are certain moves you can make to get there. And I think mentioning Aggression, like you did, promotion, obviously making moves in Edmonton, recently purchased the Fight Club, And for their next event, they've announced, you know, this news is out there, and I'm not breaking it, but they've announced a lightweight tournament, which I think is a great way to get eyeballs on your pay-per-views online and to get butts in the seats. People love a good tournament, and, you know, maybe what are your thoughts on that announcement, their lightweight tournament there at Aggression?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great way to distinguish your brand, and especially with them having just purchased the TFC and absorbed them, and you see that with Mitch Clark, the TFC lightweight champion, being a participant in the tournament. You know, it's a good way to really build interest and have people follow your show consistently, and they're not just coming out for the one event. They're building interest over three events with a tournament, right? Because you figure they'll have quarterfinals now, semifinals, and then a final. So for the next three shows, they can count on interest building, and it'll only build as it goes further. So yeah, no, it's a great idea, and you know, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I know myself as an MMA fan, I look at the names on it. You know, Shane Campbell, you know, a multi-time World Muay Thai champion, 4-0 in MMA. Like I said, Mitch Clark. Fella coming up from the States, Estevan Payen, who fights out of the Arizona Combat Sports Camp. Kurt Southern, tough kid from Southern Alberta, who had a really nice, impressive victory over Mukai Moromo not long ago. Brad Cardinal from the CMC camp. So, you know, and Ryan Mahan, you know, making the move down to 155 from welterweight. So, you know, a lot of really good, interesting names that I'm really curious to see how it's going to go over. I mean, looking over that list of fighters, you know, Trevor Wright as well in there. Who do you see as an early favorite in your eyes?
You know, maybe Ryan Mahan, I think, has a really decent chance. I think he's very experienced, has fought a lot of top quality fighters. Also, obviously, a bit of a larger lightweight, having some experience at welterweight. So I see him as an early favorite. We're never, you know, too sure with a Muay Thai guy like Shane Campbell how it's going to go for him when he steps up against some tougher fighters like this. But obviously, as a world champion, I think he has to stand out as an early favorite too. Brad Cardinal. I think maybe if you had to point to a third guy, and Mitch Clark maybe after that. But, you know, I just named half the tournament, and those are guys that are the ones I think have a real decent chance. And really everyone does have an okay chance in this tournament here. And I think what we're going to see, as I was talking to Mark Pavlich about Jimmo versus Lewis, is that the way world rankings work is, you know, in a tournament like this, if all these guys have some experience, whoever wins ends up with a real high-quality world ranking, because he can't help but make it through unscathed and sort of soak up everyone else's points a little bit like the Highlander, right? So the other great thing about this tournament is that whoever does win it will have to be recognized as one of the best lightweights in Canada, I would have to say.
No, I definitely think so. There's a lot of guys that have been making a move. I mean, Brad Cardinal, like, what's he on, a 7-fight winning streak? You know, Mitch Clark, 8-0. So yeah, it's going to be quite interesting. And Shane Campbell, of course, you know, undefeated in MMA competition. So yeah, I think people are going to, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how many people will tune in across the country, because I'm sure they'll make the fights available somehow online, probably through their website like they've done in the past, over at aggressionmma.com probably. So yeah, I'm quite curious. My interest is piqued. I mean, and on that card as well, the Aggression FC 6 card, there's Diego Wilson versus Josh Hill for their bantamweight title. And that's, again, another interesting matchup of two undefeated fighters. And then, you know, assuming that, you know, whatever happens with MFC and Aggression and Ryan Ford, assuming Ryan Ford's on the card, you know, they're starting out this new show with a lightweight tournament, a bantamweight title fight, and then probably the biggest local draw in Edmonton for fighters in the main event. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how things go for Aggression here, because they're definitely making some interesting moves. I mean, the tournament idea, what's your take on it? Do you think it's brilliant or unoriginal, or how do you feel?
I think that, you know, I think they're piggybacking to some extent off Strikeforce's use of the heavyweight tournament in terms of marketing. But you know what? That worked out amazingly. It has generated their best ratings ever on Showtime in America on their very first, and it was only two fights out of the quarterfinals out of the opening four fights, and that already was enough to generate all-time high interest in Strikeforce. And so, whether it's a particularly original idea or not, there's something classic about it. And MMA started with tournaments, and people have always loved them and will continue to. So I think that overall this is just a great move, basically, by Aggression MMA. Mark Pavlich is right that at this point they do exist on a totally separate plane from the MFC. But moves like this are the type of thing that can put you over. And you mentioned that title fight. Whether people come for the Diego Wilson versus Josh Hill bantamweight title fight and stay for the tournament, or come for the tournament and stay for the title fight. Either way, you're going to be exposed to both if you watch that card. So, we've talked it pretty close to death now. We will see. As the weeks play out between here and March 8th, whether or not Ryan Ford does end up on that card. It sounds like there's some litigation maybe to be done in that regard. But March 11th, I would pencil it in on your calendar if you're a Canadian MMA fan, for sure.
Yeah, no, definitely. Now, you mentioned the tournament, the big one, the Strikeforce heavyweight tournament, and earlier we touched on Antonio Silva and Fedor's fight. I guess always sad for any hardcore MMA fan to see Fedor lose, right? It's like finding out Santa Claus isn't real. But I think everyone would agree that that stoppage was just at the end of that second round. In terms of the fight with Karatanov and Arlovsky, do you think that we saw the last of Andre Arlovsky and what everyone suspected, that he has developed, I believe what Spencer Kite referred to as like Liddellville syndrome, where, he's just doesn't have the chin to be in there anymore?
Yeah, no, I think it's very clearly reminiscent of Chuck Liddell's sort of downfall near the end of his career. Right now we're looking at Arlovsky with four losses in a row, three of which by KO, and that was very similar to the way Liddell kind of went out. I'm not necessarily convinced that Andre Arlovsky has fought for the last time, but at a high level and against power punchers, I think maybe he should hang it up. I don't know. When there's money to be made by Strikeforce and by Andre, it's tough to turn your back on it. So I'm not convinced that he will retire. I haven't heard any confirmation of that. But I think as far as someone people consider to be a potential world beater, you have to remember that the Strikeforce audience consider Arlovsky to be the third likeliest winner of the tournament on their poll that they did during the show. So there was a lot of belief in him still out there by fans, and I think probably that's mostly diminished now. The knockout by Karatanov was savage at best. Arlovsky was completely starched and out cold. So that's the type of image that can really send your career into a nosedive for sure. And on a personal note, I really feel like I kind of blew it on that one, predicting an Arlovsky win. I mean, I was right that he was a little faster and could score with some leg kicks and jabs as he did early on in that round, but I clearly, overestimated the strength of his beard there, because even though Karatanov hits hard, the way Arlovsky went out and the way he had his hands down, that's the type of thing that, his hands were down, similar to the way they were against Bert Rogers. It's kind of... it's become typical of an Arlovsky performance at this point, and I probably should have seen it coming.
Well, and he doesn't just get knocked out. I mean, he is astral traveling, like he's just off in another realm, right? Completely gone. And, we've seen that against Fedor, where he was stiff as a board. And, for a guy's safety, we saw there's a lot of talk in Canada right now about concussions with Sidney Crosby and whatnot. To see a guy get knocked out hard cold like that, like a guy shouldn't be doing that again and again. And at some point, you wonder when is the paycheck worth it? And I don't know, for myself, having seen that so many times consecutively with Arlovsky, it just seems like you've got to stop at some point. Either that or just start competing on regional shows as the biggest name on the card with soup cans that you're going to walk through. Because getting in there with guys like Karatanov, who was feeding him uppercuts, and then when he got him down, just brutalized him with that left that finally knocked him out, it's very dangerous. you know. And it was sad because, too, you look on Twitter and Facebook at the time and everyone's like, oh, he was doing so good. And then, and that's exactly what it was during the Fedor fight. Oh, he's doing so good. And then, yeah. And against Brett Rogers, he didn't even get a chance to do that. He just got bum-rushed and, you know, beat up. So, yeah, we'll see. What do you think, Karatanov? Were you impressed with his performance at all?
I was certainly impressed. I mean, we all knew that he has knockout power. I mean, he's clearly, you know, has a history of finishing fights that way. Do I, you know, favor him to get out of his bracket with the likes of Josh Barnett still kind of lurking about? You know, I think we need to see Barnett first. We haven't seen him in a long time, but assuming he looks good against Brett Rogers, I do favor him over Karatanov. You know, but clearly he has a pretty reasonable path. I mean, I don't think he's necessarily going to get knocked out by Barnett. I think maybe a decision loss or a submission loss are the likeliest. So he'll have a puncher's chance probably throughout that fight and, you know, has a decent chance of making it into the finals where anything can happen. So it was impressive, and I think he's very much, you know, still in this tournament. David? Oh, David seems to be gone, or I'm gone. I'm not exactly sure if I'm on air, but if I am, yeah, that's basically how I feel about Karatanov.
Yeah,
David.
Now, what was? Yeah, and what did you think of any of the I guess the fill-in fights with Del Rosario defeating Johnson, Chad Griggs over Vellante, and Overeem over Cepho? Do you think any of those guys, if they get into the tournament mix, they've actually got a chance?
You know, I was most impressed, I guess, by Chad Griggs in that. I thought Gan Vellante, you know, is a little more athletic and probably was going to beat him. But Griggs surprised me again, you know, much like he did with Lashley. So, you know, I was impressed by him. But really, his technique is a little bit substandard. I mean, a bit of a barroom brawler in the stand-up anyway. So I don't necessarily like his chances at all, you know, against the likes of Karatanov or Overeem. I guess the most, you know, still what we said before is that the fighter with the best chance to actually compete in the tournament still appears to be Shane Del Rosario. Now, one thing we saw was that he gassed out a fair amount, and that was a bit surprising given that it was only, you know, a one-round fight. He seemed pretty tired afterwards, so that raised some concern. There's some talk that maybe he's more of a natural light heavyweight even. He does seem to be carrying a bit of extra weight, so you know, he still has some things, I think, to sort out before he competes with the real top dogs. But Del Rosario, I guess, would probably compete best against the actual tournament fighters. And then Valentin Overeem, it's so tough to know. I mean, he was getting probably the worst of the stand-up. And then Cepho actually seemed to engage the takedown, which didn't make a lot of sense. And Valentin Overeem kind of quickly submitted him with a neck crank, which is not a very typical submission, the type of thing you should either be able to defend or gut out as an experienced mixed martial arts fighter. So it was tough to know exactly what, you know, that showed. Maybe Valentin Overeem possibly fighting a loser from the tournament, though. I think, you know, he's still a viable fighter at heavyweight, and I think he showed that.
Yeah, well, and I still think there's big money to be made in an Overeem versus Overeem final, and do it in Holland. You know, I mean, why not? We don't even know where the April 9th event's going to be, or if it is April 9th, you know. We know that 2 months from now, Strikeforce is having some event somewhere. But that's sort of one of the differences when you talk about promotions. You know, we're 2 months from the show, and we don't know where the next date's going to be for the tournament. Yeah, it's just a bit odd and awkward. But let's move away from last weekend and let's look forward to this weekend. Outside of Canada, but down in the States in Lemoore, California, Tachi Palace Fights 8 takes place. And on that card, Canada's own David Loiseau is going to be on there fighting for the middleweight title against Leopoldo Serrao, the champion. Josh, what do you think? Has the Crow got what it takes to take the belt away from Serrao?
You know, with David Loiseau, he's obviously a very talented fighter, you know, when he can get into his groove and get going. But Leopoldo Serrao, not a lot of people know of him, but he is the Tachi Palace Fights champion, and he is just a very tough, rugged dude, much younger than Loiseau as well. And I think at this point in David Loiseau's career, you know, he brings in the fans, people know his name, he obviously has a very notable history with the Ultimate Fighting Championship, but I have a hard time picking him in just about any fight, frankly, against top quality, young, you know, next generation fighters. I think that basically the Crow's day is close to done at this point. Should he win, you know, I'll be as excited as any other Canadian MMA fan, but I wouldn't necessarily predict it. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, it'll be interesting to see, because, I mean, I think what fans have been able to surmise about David's fighting over the last couple of years, I mean, I think he's probably 4-2 in his last six fights. But that there's some kind of block there between what he does in the gym, where, you know, around TriStar, he's known as the guy to train with, right? I mean, there's a reason why GSP trains with David Loiseau, you know, is because he's a great fighter. But, you know, actually transitioning and bringing that to the cage, there appears to have been something that's happened. And, you know, we saw that in his loss to Mario Miranda at UFC 115 in Vancouver last year. So it'll be curious to see. I mean, if he's overcome that and worked on that side of his game and can go in there against, like you say, a next-generation fighter. You know, and I think everyone will be interested too. And, you know, you can watch it for free on MMAJunkie.com for anyone that doesn't know. You know, well worth checking out, because not only that, but there's also on the card the number one ranked flyweight in the world, Husier da Silva against Ian McCall. So even though the UFC hasn't brought in the flyweight division, you know, one day it will happen, and right now the top dog is da Silva. Any thoughts on that fight, Josh?
Well, I think what you're seeing on the Tetra Palace fights card here is two high-level flyweight fights that are probably pretty well designed to set up a kind of maybe the first flyweight super fight in North America between the current champion, Ulysses Gomez, who's fighting Daryl Montague, and, as you mentioned, the top-ranked flyweight in the world, Husier da Silva, who's fighting Ian McCall. Now, both McCall and Montague are significantly lower ranked and you know, less held in lower regard than either of these guys. So to me, it seems like, you know, a preview. They're hoping, I assume, that Gomez and da Silva both win their fights and set up a title fight between the two of them, which, as I said, would be the biggest flyweight title fight in North American history, and maybe really in the history of the division. It's very young and just kind of coming together. So that's definitely something to watch on this card. The UFC has expressed interest in adding a flyweight division at some point in the future, and you know, given the relationship they have with picking up fighters from Tetra Palace fights, I see no reason why, when they do that, they won't have both these guys on the UFC roster, both Gomez and da Silva. So it's a bit of a look into the future if you're interested. Now, one thing I'm concerned about is that the last time at Tetra Palace Fights 7, with Alessio's fight there, it was Phil Collins, the MMA Junkie stream was pretty much garbage, and I wasn't sure if it was just my experience, but after the fight, tooling around the internet and seeing some of the comments, it turns out that was the sort of experience of everyone who attempted to watch that stream. So I'm just really hoping, more than anything, that we'll get a chance to really watch these fights, because there are other high-quality fighters on this card as well, Fabricio Camois, for example, John Gunderson, a couple guys with UFC experience there. So, you know, it's a decent little card.
Yeah, no, it's interesting how you mentioned fighters going up to the big show, up to the UFC from Tetra Palace, because it's almost served as a feeder league over the years, you know, a de facto one. But another interesting note, too, for people in particular in the Toronto area, touching on David Loiseau, the world premiere of The Striking Truth will be taking place on February 25th. At the world premiere, Sportsnet Showdown, Joe Ferraro, we'll be hosting a Q&A with George St. Pierre, David Loiseau, and the director, Stephen Wong. If you don't know, the film follows David and George through their training and their fights, and gets behind the scenes into their lives and what it actually looks like doing what they do and what they put into it. I was lucky enough to be able to spend some time with Steve, the director and the executive producer, James Hergott, in Vancouver at the UFC last year. And, yeah, it's really exciting stuff, what they've got. It's all shot in HD, just beautiful. So if you're in the Toronto area, definitely check that out. MMACanada.net, you can find the link to get tickets for it. Coming up this weekend, though, besides Tachi Palace fights in Canada, there's a couple of shows to take note of. In particular, if you're in Alberta, Rumble in the Cage 42 is taking place in Lethbridge. Jordan Meehan in the main event, taking on Keto Allen. Both these guys were defeated by Jason High in 2010. Keto hasn't fought since. Jordan is on a roll, having defeated Chase Dagenhart and then most recently Joe Riggs. So it's going to be really exciting to see these two battle it out there. You can watch the fights for probably $9.99 on GoFightLive.tv. So definitely worth checking out. Josh, do you have any thoughts on Keto and Jordan there, sort of the wrestler versus the all-round fighter?
Yeah, I think Jordan Meehan, especially coming off the big destruction of Riggs there, has to probably enter this fight as a favorite. But it's going to be a real tough test for him, for a still-developing young fighter like Meehan, although, I mean, a very experienced one. Certainly a tough test. I probably favor him. This maybe can be seen as not a warm-up fight, but a companion fight to his upcoming match with Matt McGrath in Ontario, the first show in Ontario there, MMA The Reckoning on April 9th, I believe. So Jordan Meehan, if he runs through both of those fights, if he were to get through Keto Allen and you know, another rugged, experienced fighter in Matt McGrath, then I think everyone's really interested to see kind of what's next for this guy, maybe even a call-up to the UFC at that point.
No, I'm very curious what it's going to take. I think if Jordan is able to, like you say, win those next two fights, and with the UFC date coming in June to Vancouver, which isn't far from his base in Alberta, I wouldn't at all be surprised to see him get the call there. It's kind of interesting to see the circling of the fighters with, you know, Keto fighting Jordan now, Jordan taking on Matt McGrath, who just lost to Caleb Starnes. You know, it's kind of hard to find rankings, too, in Canada, because these guys are all shifting weight classes, right, to be fighting one another. It's a bit odd that way. Another note on that Rumble in the Cage card is Brad Cardinal taking on Rob Roy. Rob, a tough kid out of BC, coming in with a 3-3 record. But Brad Cardinal, as we mentioned earlier, is participating in the Aggression MMA lightweight tournament and is on a 7-fight winning streak. So it'll be interesting to see how he fares in that fight and get an idea of where he's at going into his March fight, March 11th at Aggression 6. Now, I don't know if you had a chance, Josh, to read the story that Mac Lamoureux put together on the site last week about Lee Meehan throwing out the $50,000 promoter challenge. But it was crazy, the traffic it got. I'm talking like it was GSP, you know, comes out of the closet level traffic, you know, like crazy traffic. Do you think that Lee's serious? And for those of you that don't know or didn't miss the show, Lee Meehan is the promoter of Rumble in the Cage, the show going on in Lethbridge. And he put up a $50,000 challenge for a promoter's tournament, winner take all. Do you think he's serious? And do you think there's any promoters that would take him up on it?
And if I did read the article. I also remember that he made that announcement on our show as well. Well, but I don't think that it was, he may have been serious, but I don't think that it's particularly realistic. I mean, I find it interesting that the general public is so energized and enthusiastic about this idea. Is there a promo? You know, if the interest is there, if people are reading this article like it's going out of style, the way you say, then maybe it could come together. I'm not sure who would put up this $50,000. That's a significant amount of money, but he may be able to find a promoter to fight him. Possibly, you know, an idea that jumps to mind would be Jason Haidt out of Armageddon FC here in Victoria.
Yeah,
but no, I mean, I don't take any of it particularly seriously, no.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting, though. I mean, we should pursue this. Like you said, Jason Haidt, you know, there's Tim Haig, puts on his show Unified. And if it's North American wide, that opens it up. You know, Marcus Davis has got the first sanctioned event coming up in Maine going on. Why not bring a lightweight in there? It'll be interesting to see, maybe put him against Tim Haig in the opening round. You know, but either way, I'm just throwing it out there. I'd still love to see it. But who knows if we will. And then sort out in your neck of the woods there, Josh, this weekend out in Coquitlam, B.C., West Coast Promotions is putting on Seeing Red 2. Of course, being the lower mainland area in B.C., it's an amateur fight card, but it's just chock-a-block full of title fights, Muay Thai title fights, as well as bantamweight, featherweight, and lightweight title fights. What are your thoughts on this card, Josh?
Yeah, to be clear, we're going back to Friday now, Rumble in the Cage 42 on GoFightLive.com, where I intend to watch it. That's Saturday. Now we're going back to Friday, same night as Statue Palace Fights 8. And yeah, Seeing Red 2 in Coquitlam. It's an all-amateur card because, as many listeners know, all fight cards, in MMA cards in particular, in Vancouver are still required to contain only amateur fights. So, but there are some experienced and interesting fighters on the card. Murray Sogan has competed for a title for them in the past, and now I believe dropping down to his more natural weight at lightweight in the main event against Andrew Small to compete for a title. And as you mentioned, there are sort of a bevy of titles on offer, and you know, fans generally enjoy a good title fight. It heightens the drama. And really, Seeing Red, they're part of the West Coast Promotions family of fight promotions. They also do boxing events, and Muay Thai. You know, the president, Manny Sobrow, is a former Canadian Olympic boxer, well-known around town. So, you know, I assume it'll be another great event. Again, it's Friday evening. I won't be able to make it. Generally, I do make it out to every BC MMA event that I can. Because it's on Friday, you know, to rush there from work and try to catch a ferry will just prove too difficult this time. So, unfortunately, I won't be there, but any fans who want to let me know how it went, Jay Oliveira at MMACanada.net, you can find that email address, you know, in a couple different places on MMACanada.net. You know, the site. So let us know. Let us know how the event went. We'll probably have results up. You know, I think it should be good.
Yeah, no, for sure. We'll have live results throughout the night from Rumble in the Cage and Seeing Red. I'm sure we'll have our man Sohail out there bringing us the results throughout the night. For the folks out on the other side of the country, in Halifax, Palooka's Boxing Club, on Saturday night, we'll be hosting Extreme Cage Combat 11. It'll be an interesting mix of MMA and Muay Thai fights. In the main event, Justin Steele and Jeff Black will be fighting. And interesting note will be Ricky Goodall, a sort of well-known Canadian MMA fighter, will be fighting an amateur or exhibition Muay Thai fight that night. So if you're kind of interested to go to an old-school smoker type event, definitely go ahead and check that out if you're in the Halifax area. But that about covers things for this week, Josh. I guess looking forward to next week, we've got that big MFC show. Who do you favor there in the two title fights? First off, light heavyweight, who would you pick, Jim Owen Lewis?
Well, I think Jimmo, you could see as a fairly significant favorite, you know, has the slightly bigger wins, you know, maybe the slightly better rounded game. So I think Jimmo is probably a favorite there. But of course, you know, Dwayne Lewis always has a chance as well. I think in the lightweight fight, I think that's a very competitive fight. Drew Fickett, as Mark Pavlich mentioned, is on a bit of a roll, having won that Shine Fights one-night tournament on an Indian reservation, whatever that was, but went through some quality fighters in order to win that title, Carlo Prater included. So I think that fight, you know, could go either way, really, and I think it hinges on what we were talking about before, on what Antonio McKee kind of shows up. His fight with Volkman was very slow, typified, you know, all of the criticisms that people have of him. Should he come out aggressive, I think maybe he could overwhelm Fickett, but if you give Drew Fickett too much time to get comfortable, you know, he can find submissions and he can find ways to win. So, you know, that's a very close fight. I guess I favor Antonio McKee if he comes out and kind of fights his fight. One other note, though, is this Friday, there's a Strikeforce Challengers card as well on Super Channel. So, you know, look out for a big performance, I think, from Lyle Beerbaum, undefeated fighter out of Team Fancy Pants, his own gym, you know, taking on kind of a rugged journeyman in Pat Healy, but in a fight many expect Beerbaum to kind of be showcased in. And other good fighters on that card, that Carlo Prater I just mentioned, and Ryan Couture the son of Randy Couture. So, you know, that's Friday. Friday you have Strikeforce Challengers 14, as well as Tachi Palace Fights 8 on the international scene, featuring David Loazzo, as we mentioned, and Seeing Red 2 if you're in the Coquitlam area. So that's Friday. Saturday, you're looking at Rumble in the Cage 42 out of Lethbridge, Alberta, available on GoFightLive.com, and also Extreme Cage Combat 11 if you're in the Halifax area. So, yeah, we'll look forward to probably a more MFC-focused show next week. It'll be on a Wednesday, just 2 days before the big MFC 28 Supremacy card. So I assume we'll get right into that next week.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, and I'm going to give you a reason to listen next week and save my predictions till then. So until next Wednesday, same time, same place, I'm David Stanford, and for Joshua Oliveira, thank you for listening, MMA Canada. Peace.
Peace.